We're in the sixth chapter of Realization of Oneness. The title is somewhat deceptive in the sense that it says one thing, but we've all been seeing it now for some 10 years, and many of us still don't see what it is saying to us. It is called living the principles of impersonalization. And that word living is emphasized in the title, as well as principles, as well as impersonalization. And even though it's there in black and white, even though it was in the Bible in black and white, even though it was heard upon the earth by many leaders, the word impersonalization still is a great enigma to most people. Now, in the June chapter, it was also a letter, you see, that came out in June. There is a little section at the end called, Is the Infinite Way Truth? And it would appear to be part of the chapter. However, there was a special point to this little series of paragraphs at the end, and it becomes more apparent when we go to the letter of Joel issued in June of that year. The year was 1964. He apparently wrote it in May of 64. And he did something in this letter that he very rarely does. You recall that first there would be a letter from Joel to the students all over the world, and that usually was taken from a tape, so that it wasn't really a current letter. And to make it perfectly current, he would add a little series of paragraphs called Across the Desk. And that would be the total letter, plus a few things at the back. But on this particular occasion, he did something quite different. After completing both the letter and the across-the-desk message, Joel then included an important notice for practitioners and teachers, stating that if they were selling books, please be sure to know that they were only to sell Infinite Way books. And you would expect that this would definitely be the end of the complete mailing, but instead, he now found it necessary, for some reason known to him, to include an additional letter, a letter to all the students about truth, Infinite Way truth. This appears as the ending of your chapter 6, Living the Principles of Impersonalization, in the book, Realization of Oneness. But it really is this added letter to the letter of June 1964. And so let's read it in full, because it applies to what we discussed last week about Christ truth, namely that many people follow what they think is truth and then discover that they've really made a detour, because truth is very deceptive to the human mind. Only when you find Christ truth have you really found truth itself. There is no such thing as human truth. And so let's read this letter very carefully of Joel's, which begins, Dear students, it is inevitable that occasions will arise which cause you to question whether the infinite way is really truth. Many have questioned the truth of Christianity even while the Master walked among them. Did not the disciples fall away at times? Laozi became so discouraged by the lack of recognition and acceptance that he just walked away from it all and disappeared. This is to assure you that the infinite way is truth. But students, even practitioners or teachers, may at times fail. It is not the teaching that is power, but the measure of the student's attainment of consciousness of infinite way truth, only in proportion to our attuned consciousness of truth are we the light that dispels the appearance of darkness. The principles of the infinite way will develop that consciousness in proportion to our study and meditation. The infinite way is truth, and it, capital I, it, meaning infinite way truth, cannot fail. Our devotion to the truth and practice of its principles will enable us to attain the consciousness of truth, which reveals divine harmony where material evil or good had appeared. I'll repeat that. Where material evil or material good had appeared. The object of the infinite way is not overcoming or destroying or rising above evil, but rather attaining that mind that was in Christ Jesus, or the Buddha mind, which reveals the spiritual man and universe where evil or good humanhood had claimed existence. Let us for a while forget about doing good, or saving the world, or helping our fellow man, and give our entire attention to our own spiritual enlightenment until we are sought out. Be assured, as we attain a measure of realized Christhood, the world will be the pathway to us. Actually, we can only benefit others in proportion as we are attaining some measure of spiritual realization ourselves. The multitude came to the Master. He did not have to seek them. The multitude still seek the Master. So be that, even in a degree, and the multitudes will seek you for the light. He concludes with a quotation, "The vine consumeth not its own grapes." Signed, Joel. Now, that was after the whole letter had been written that we're discussing here today. It was after Across the Desk had been written. You can make of it whatever you will. He had rarely made an addition to a letter after writing something called Across the Desk After the Letter. That was in May of 64. Now, the truth then is independent of the practitioner and the teacher. The truth may be misused or misunderstood or misapplied, but it remains always itself. We must learn the truth. And now we find, standing before the world, an individual saying, "I have taught you the truth, and now I am prepared to demonstrate that what I taught you is the truth, because I'm willing to die for that truth, just as I was willing to live for that truth." So we have the statement of the Master in John 12. "Now is my soul troubled, and what shall I say? Father, save me from this hour. But for this cause came I unto this hour." If you're not following a truth which will enable you to reach that point and make that declaration, then you're not following truth. Each of us will be called to stand at that point of consciousness saying, now is mine hour come, and I cannot say to the Father, let this cup pass, for it was for this hour that I came unto the world. Now we want to understand why his soul was troubled. We want to understand that message there. And I think the best way we can do it is to look at our chapter in impersonalization, with the assumption that everything we're to learn in impersonalization is part of the consciousness of Christ Jesus. To put it simply, to impersonalize means to see no person. We have all avoided that. We have said the evil isn't there, sickness isn't there, the error isn't there. There's no error in that person. There's no evil in that person. You're not going to reach the hour of conviction without qualms if you still think that the evil isn't in that person, because that's not going far enough. That's right, the evil isn't in that person because there is no person. Now then, living the principles of impersonalization. To live them, we must know them. And we must have reached the conviction that only these principles are the truth that we can live. That we can't quibble, we can't work both sides of the fence, and so we must finalize those principles in our consciousness. And you must begin with the basic principle that God is all. It doesn't matter where you study or what you study. It could be any one of the 85 religions of the world, or any one of the metaphysical groups that meet throughout the world. It would still have to begin with the acceptance that God is all. That's not a doctrine. That's a fact. That's the Christ message, God is all. And when you begin with God is all, you can only live that principle if you refuse to adulterate that truth with pseudo-truth, with half-truth, with make-believe truth, with dilutions based upon opinions, fears, doubts, and complete ignorance of the fact that because God is all, whatever is not God does not exist. And therefore, when you look out on persons, if you accept them as you see them, you are denying the allness of God. One person is sick, one person is dying, one person is suffering, one person is poor, one person is facing surgery, another person is an amputee, another person is something else, and the principle of Christ is that God is all. God being all, there must be a readjustment of our belief and a readjustment of our reactions because of our beliefs. A total intensive retraining process. How can I practice living impersonalization and the truth that God is all if I accept that there is sickness appearing before me as a fact, or lack, or limitation? I would have to first accept that God is sick, or lacking, or limited. And because God is all, I cannot accept anything that God is not as being there. And so your impersonalization is that which I see as person must be something else that can't be a sick person. It can't be an ailing person, a suffering person, a dying person. And God isn't a person, so it can't be a person. And the mind, while it rebels, is refusing to impersonalize. It was satisfied to make some declarations, but now, faced with the fact that there is no person there, the mind doesn't know what to do. And so we have to feed that mind something to do. We have to say, look, little mind, that's not a person. You are unable to see what's there, that's all. You're looking at the Spirit of God. We want you to start identifying what is there correctly. Every time you look out and see a little dimpled darling, you're not seeing what's there. And every time you look out and see an amputee or a lame person or a blind person or a sick person, you're not seeing what is there. The principle is God is there. And that is it. And so you must identify what is there correctly. You must acknowledge the presence of God is there. And every time the mind skips a note in the scale and refuses to see that God is there, you take the mind and you bring it right back to the point where it has made the wrong interpretation. Just like a child playing the piano. You say, no, I said middle C. Until the child hits middle C. And you say to your mind, that is the invisible presence of God, and I won't let you go until you affirm that truth. And then you practice. And as Joel says, you practice and you practice again. You work hard. You have to retrain the initial impulse to identify person rather than to identify the invisible presence of God. And as you retrain, as you very scrupulously refuse to let the human mind malpractice you, or malpractice anyone, you consciously remain spiritually alert, identifying every form you see as the invisible presence of God, and you don't stop with persons. The animal, the bird, the fish and the fowl, the flower and the tree, the stone in the road, everything you see invisibly must be the presence of God. And everything, therefore, that you do see is not what is there. We must impersonalize only because that which we see is not what is there. And so we find we're looking at image projections of the carnal mind. And we're giving them labels. We're calling them person, place, thing, condition. And these very labels that we give them turn right around and they half beat us to death sometime. We say, that's a nice little atom bomb. And that over there is a germ. And this over here is a freeway. And this over there is a weapon. And while we name these things in our mind, they return to the sender, because they are concepts of our own mind. The very fears that beset us, we ourselves have set in motion by our unwillingness to see that invisibly only the presence of God is. And so, if you are not contemplating that, meditating upon it, and consciously with your eyes open, re-identifying everything, everyone that you see as the invisible presence of God, you're in direct malpractice. You're violating the first commandment, acknowledge me in all thy ways. And you're going to suffer from it until you acknowledge me in all thy ways. And now, it is important then to see that from that point on, your doing of this is going to determine the fruitage or lack of it that you experience. It's also going to determine the degree to which you are able to walk in the kingdom of God or in the world. Because while you are identifying the objects and the forms and the persons and things around you as your eye tells you they are, you are walking in the world. And only as you go through what you see to the invisible spirit that is present are you beginning to walk in the kingdom. And so that is principle number one in our impersonalization. God is the only presence. And beside the presence of God, there is no other presence. Whether it's called tin or gold or platinum, rubies or sapphires or emeralds, wood, or any substance known to man, or whether it is called flesh and blood, or whether it is called fur, or whether it is called a blade of grass, the only presence is the invisible Spirit of God. You have reduced the visible world to its true invisible denomination, the allness, the indivisibility, the one, the only life that exists. And when this becomes magnified in your consciousness, the fruitage of it must appear. Because we are told that if you acknowledge me in all thy ways, you will bear fruit richly. Now, because we have God as the only presence, it follows that there is no other presence, and therefore there is no person present. And when you have been willing to see that the one you call person is your concept about something else, you will look for that something else. And there you will see the invisible Spirit of God, not with your human eye, but first with the eye of faith, before you see it with the eye of soul. And as you are willing to go past the visible form to identify the invisible spirit that is present, you will become conscious of other qualities that are there. The inner doors open. The activity of grace begins to express in this consciousness that is willing to expand beyond the visible scene. And now we know then that where you are is an invisible substance called spirit, an invisible being called spirit, an invisible light, which is the very light of God, the Spirit of God, and the being of God, right where you stand. You're making every place on this earth holy ground by recognizing that it is holy ground. And you're willing to stand without wavering in the face of everything that appears to deny it. whether it's a loved one or an enemy. You're seeing neither saint nor sinner, neither rich nor poor, neither Greek nor Jew. You're seeing only that which the human eye cannot see. And you're seeing it with the eye of faith, there invisibly, and everywhere invisibly, is the living Spirit of the living God. And you are accepting that whoever appears before you is truly the temple of the living God. You are impersonalizing the appearance and accepting the invisible Christ everywhere. Now I know that there are certain people in our experience that make it difficult for us to do this. And they are the very ones who will help you the most. Because when it's easy to do, you will not develop the capacity to do this under every and all circumstances. And the very ones in your human experience who seem to you to be the most objectionable are those who are planted there to make you overcome your human instinct of labeling, of judging, of criticizing, of resenting, of condemning. All of this is world mind in you and world mind in them reacting. And we must come above this carnal mind, which makes us look out upon those we feel we have to judge. And so Joel tells us, never say that man is a thief. He could have said many other things that you could never say about that man or that woman. Why? Because you're mistaken. We are not here to improve upon God or to correct God or to call God a liar. We are here to learn the nature of God. God says, I am the only. Beside me, there is no other. Seek ye first the kingdom of God. And that's what we're seeking. First, we identify only the kingdom of God, not the person. So to the Spirit, not the flesh. And that's what we identify, the Spirit. Cease ye from man. So we do not identify man. Choose ye this day God or Mammon. And we choose every instant to see the invisible Spirit that our eyes cannot see. And now as we dwell with this, we know that nothing can come into our experience except the Spirit of God, because nothing else is present. Only the Spirit of God being present, we can drop all consciousness about that which is not the Spirit of God. We can drop the consciousness of fear, because it's built upon the belief that something beside God is present. We can drop the consciousness of anxiety, of doubt, of impatience, of frustration, of self-guilt. All of these emotions are based upon the belief that something beside God is present. And so as long as we maintain these emotions and give them rein to act freely, we are permitting ourselves to deny that only the presence of God is present. We continue to purify. We continue to impersonalize until a conviction is reached. It matters not where I look today or tomorrow. It matters not if my eyes are closed. It matters not where I am, what time of day or year, or what kind of weather, or what kind of world situation. It matters not what happens to my physical form. It matters not what happens to my human mind. All that is present, without exception, is the presence of God. We will have someday to stand upon this. Nothing is here but God, nothing is there but God. No hate, no violence, no animosities, no greed, no corruption. In every level of the world experience, we purify our belief that another presence beside God is here. And now we have, at least in intellect, come to a place where we can say there is no material universe. Matter is not God created. Therefore, matter is not present ever. Only spirit, which is God, is present. That is my substance. That is the substance of those I have loved. That is the substance of those I have hated and despised. That is the substance of those I have feared. But if they are spirit, and I am spirit, who have I feared? Who have I hated? Who have I despised? And who have I loved? We come down to the one infinite denominator, Spirit, God, none other. Always with the object of living in truth, for only truth will take us into the experience of reality. Spirit contains no evil. No error, no sickness, no aging process, no death. And therefore, in the impersonalization, which brings me to the conviction of the allness of spirit, I come to the conviction that all that appears to me as death, aging, lack, limitation, disease, hate, fear, all this, must be untrue. It cannot exist in spirit, and spirit is all. As long as I have the first principle that the Spirit of God is the only presence, the only substance, knowing it contains nothing unlike itself, I can know within myself that all evil on the earth has no existence. And I can discover that it exists only in what we have called the carnal mind. It does not exist in a person for a very simple reason. That which I have called person is not there. The Spirit of God is there, appearing to my mortal limited sense as a person. And so with the evil that I have pinned on that person, it only appears to my limited mortal sense. It isn't there either. There is no person in whom evil can exist, because there is no person. There is no person through whom evil can act. There is no person. There is no person who can accuse me. There simply is no person there. There is no person who can defeat me. There is no person there. There is no person who can overrule me. There is no person there to judge me. There is no person there to hate me or to love me. There is no person there. The Spirit of God is there, and it is pure, perfect spirit without blemish. That which has appeared in the human scene is world mind, carnal mind, the dream mind, projecting its dream. Impersonalize that which the world mind places before you by standing in the knowledge of one presence, spirit alone. The qualities of spirit cannot be absent where the spirit is. Therefore, the qualities of evil, the qualities of hate, the qualities of error are not present but seem to be. Only goodness can be present. Only intelligence can be present. Only wisdom can be present. And though you do not see the harmony, only harmony can be present. You must impersonalize the absence of harmony, impersonalize the presence of discord. Because even though the harmony is not visible, it must be present, just as spirit must be present. The presence of spirit guarantees the presence of harmony, no matter what the picture seems to be. And again, we live on the principle of truth, that if ye know the truth will make you free. The truth is that spirit alone is present, and therefore the qualities of spirit, which include harmony, are present, and no other activity opposite to the qualities of spirit can be present. It isn't a question of does it appear or doesn't it. It's a question of truth, and truth is always present. The appearance or non-appearance does not change the truth. And only when you know the truth will that truth come forth to show you. Then in the knowledge of truth, all unlike itself must dissolve. And so the retraining continues. Not a statement, not an affirmation, not a remembrance or a memory, but living. Practicing, that only spirit is present and only the perfect qualities of spirit are present. We're not walking in the world then, we're walking in our Father's kingdom. We're not sowing to the flesh, we're sowing to the spirit. We're not living in the imperishables, we're living in those indestructible qualities of spirit which are ever present. And we are becoming no longer a blotter for the world mind. We are becoming free in self, in truth. Now this is a firming up process. And as you strengthen yourself through the practice of the allness of God, the only presence of God, you've accepted omnipresence, which automatically eliminates the presence of persons and the presence of evil and error in persons. Only goodness is happening. The only activity is the presence of spiritual activity. That's all that can be happening now and all that ever will happen. Now, unless this is practiced, physical form intrudes upon us. First thing you know, why, we're back in the physical form consciousness, accepting the images. We've lost our whole impersonal life. And we're personalizing again. We're back into people and grading people and sorting them out and preferring this one to that one. And you start the whole pyramid of untruth all over again. The allness of God, the non-person, the presence of that spirit where person appears, the presence of the qualities of spirit where human personal qualities seem to be. And so somebody may lie to you, somebody may resent you. You can say that this person is lying about me, or this person is casting doubts about my honesty. Or you can know the truth that here is the Spirit of God, while carnal mind is impersonating that spirit into the appearance called person, into the activity called ego. But they cannot be there because only the Spirit of God is there. There's no one there through whom a lie can be told. There's no one there to hate me. There's no one there to challenge me. All that is there is the Spirit of God. Pilate isn't there. The cripple isn't there. The blind man isn't there. All of the miracles tell you that what the human eye thought was there wasn't there. Something else was there, the Spirit of God. And you, through impersonalization, become a witness of that Spirit. And as you do this, you feel the lifting within you of the Christ mind. Now let's see some higher truth as we continue our impersonalization. All activities of persons are merely symbols of invisible spiritual activity. Carnal mind is interpreting spiritual activity into persons and personal activities. But carnal mind is changing nothing. All that is present is invisible spiritual activity. It is always perfect. It is always self-fulfilling. It is always present, for it is the activity of the Spirit which is always present. Now, it might help you if you could do this. Wherever you're looking, you're looking out of a carnal mind, and consequently you're going to see that which is called incarnation. It's actually the so-called incarnation of your carnal mind. Now, part of the higher truth to come to is that there is nothing out there in the world except the images in your mind. And take all of these images in the world and bring them right back to your mind and see that the world complete is in your mind. There's nothing in the world except what is in your mind. Nothing else is out there. Everything in your world is in your mind. And if you hear the dog barking 20 feet away, just as you are consciously impersonalizing person to know that only the Spirit of God is there, just as you are consciously impersonalizing dog to know that only the Spirit of God is there, see if you can add this step. Not only is only the Spirit of God there, but that dog bark which I hear is not out there. It's in my mind. I know it seems to be out there 20 feet away, but the dog out there is in my mind and the bark of the dog is in my mind. If spirit alone is there, then the dog isn't there. There's an image called dog, and what makes images? The mind projects images. And therefore the dog so-called out there is right here in my mind, not out there. Everything out there is right here in my mind. Now, when you are dwelling with this a while, you're not only impersonalizing, but you're locating the identity of the image within your mind. And obviously, if you are in dominion over your mind, you're in dominion over the image. The moment you recognize the image in your mind and not out there, you're taking control of that image. Now, what in your mind has power? If it isn't out there, and it's in your mind, what power has it? The only power it had is you thought it was out there. But it isn't out there. That barking dog out there isn't out there. It's a dog barking in your mind. The fur, the shape, the size, the sound, all in your mind. And when you have impersonalized that dog to this extent, how's it going to bite you? Can your mind bite you? You come to the understanding that external to your mind is nothing but the Spirit of God. You had thought a world was there because you had not reached the conclusion that only God is. And when you have reached the conclusion that only God is, you know God isn't a dog. You know God isn't a dog with hydrophobia. You know God doesn't bite people. What's there? You've located an image in mind, in your mind. And you can locate 5 million more of those images until you know that every image in the world is an image in your mind. And that meditated with, dwelt with, lived with, begins to show you the sense of power without yet even attaining a spiritual realization. The moment you know this is all in my mind, you take it and be still with it. It really isn't out there at all, any of it, because the Spirit of God is out there. The Spirit of God is out there and everywhere out there, and all that is in the Spirit of God is the activity of the Spirit. It includes no material activity. It includes no destructive activity, no diseased activity, no unhappy activity, no problematic activity. Where is all this? It's in our universal mind, repeated in our individual carnal mind. And so we are learning to readjust, to reappraise, and to stand fast without reaction. Not without reaction to a dog, but without reaction to the images in our minds. Once we place them in our minds where they are, we'll find it's easier not to react. Nobody in the world has ever insulted you. Nobody. Nobody in the world has ever hated you. It would appear that way. But the appearance was deceptive. Only the Spirit of God was there. Now, as we continue this impersonalization, bringing all images back into mind where they are, and then dropping them, we find they lose their power. And we are willing to accept, after a few trials of this, that because only Spirit is present, only the power of Spirit is present. There is no power beside that power of the Spirit. There is no self beside that self of the Spirit. There is no second self. No second self other than the one divine self. No second power other than the one divine power. And to some extent we can begin to live with this because we know that the tricks of the human mind have made images which seemed external called powers, things, places, and persons. As we're able to hold to the truth of the one Spirit, the one divine self, the all-present life of the Father, the all-present qualities of the Father, the never-ceasing truth of His presence, All else begins to diminish. The false powers, the false appearances, the false conditions, the situations which had us up nights wondering what to do. There simply was no such situation, except in the world mind repeated in the individual mind. Everything that has threatened us, everything we have ever suffered from, everything we fear, every condition that appears to be pointed at us, using us as a target and a football, is a denial of the all presence of God, and we're suffering only from our conscious or unconscious denial. You have a Father within you, and your unawareness of the Father within proportionately brings about your awareness of the lie without. To the degree that you deny the Father within, to that degree you admit, accept, and fear the lie without. But when the Father within you, the living Spirit of God as your being, is accepted, when your days are spent accepting the Father within and not denying the Father, the external world is seen to be a sham. Its deception has no power, and it has no person in you through whom to work, because you have impersonalized you. The Father within is your very being, your own substance, your spirit. Where is the Father within? It is your identity. We have been denying the Father within as if there were no such thing. But seek ye first the kingdom of God. Of thine own self I can do nothing. The Father within doeth the works. Always the revelation that the Father within you is your own spiritual selfhood. Now we've impersonalized the world, the persons in the world, the living creatures in the world, the objects in the world. We're down to me. And that's what Jesus is down to right here. He's down to him. Shall he pray to God and say, "Save me"? When for this very purpose, to reveal there is no him, he has come into the world. To reveal there is no physical self. To reveal the spiritual nature of mankind. To reveal the lack and absence and total inability of any power in the world to change your spiritual self or to destroy it. But he says, "My soul is troubled." And so the world has put a connotation on that, that he was somewhat afraid. He was afraid of what lay ahead. How silly, considering that this was only a rerun. It already passed the point of no return. Your soul would be troubled if you were leaving your children. Your soul would be troubled if you knew they needed you, but they needed something else more than your presence as a physical person. Soul was troubled, just as yours would be, but not for himself. Troubled because those he had to leave had not yet reached the point of understanding. Troubled because the world had not yet come to the point of Christhood. Troubled because of the seeming tribulations that lay ahead for all of the world because of its inability to know that only God is present. Could Christ be troubled for Christ? Yes, it would seem there was a duality there, even to be concerned about those he was leaving.
But you'll discover that the appearance of duality dissolves as we move in closely to this. You'll discover that in you will come the same appearance of duality as you learn that you are to make your transition. You will say, I hate to leave those around me, not only those I love, but all those in this world, because if they only knew what I could tell them, which they are unable to hear. So your soul would be troubled. And yet, what could delay your transition when you had reached that level of understanding? Strangely, when Joel wrote this little note about how infinite way is truth, and that it was independent of both teacher and practitioner, it was always truth, no matter what you did with it or didn't do with it. He was about to make transition too. He also was saying, in a way, my soul is troubled. That's why he wrote his little note. He had to leave. And he had to leave the truth that had come through him in this world. And he wanted us to know that that truth is dependable truth. And when you take it and live with it, not just the sixth chapter, with the truth itself, it dissolves all that is unlike God. And then that which is called form is seen in its nothingness, and that which is life just continues living, ageless, free, independent of form, impersonal, not personal, not person, but something else, Christ's spirit. And we are learning to impersonalize so that we can come into the experience of being that which is the impersonal spirit, which is now independent of form, which is now independent of disease, which is now independent of death, which is now independent of all human conditions. We're not learning about it to enjoy it in the future. We're learning to live in it now, to make it our daily way of life. All of our previous studies in truth, based upon learning things, were a prelude to living as the Spirit of God. All of these early pioneers, like Paul, Peter, working closely under the direction of Jesus Christ, they did things that paved the way for us. They learned to look out at a spiritual universe the hard way. They had nothing to go by. They were right there in the jungle. They didn't have the perspective of time. And when they were told that you have to suffer like me, they just went out and suffered like him. In Matthew somewhere, before going into Jerusalem, he says to his disciples, John and James, your mother wants me to make you important in the kingdom.